I'm Rob Jansen from the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory. Today I'm going to talk about our work on improving tourist congestion management. This is joint work with John Geddes from the University of Minnesota, Chris Watzek and Micah Scherer from Georgetown University, and Paul Syverson, also from NRL. So this talk is going to be all about TOR. TOR is an anonymous communication system. Clients can communicate with internet services using TOR, and the way they do this is they encrypt their messages, and the messages sent through a path of TOR relays, and the messages are decrypted in a way that no single point on this path between the client and the server can determine both the client and the destination. So this gives the client anonymity. So you've probably heard before, TOR is slow. There's actually been over a dozen publications in the last 2 years alone. This is not a comprehensive list, providing performance enhancements for the TOR network. The problem with most of this work ignores the question of where is TOR slow, and so this talk is all about answering this question. And we do this with a multifaceted approach. We measure congestion both on relays in the public TOR network as well as in a private simulated TOR network. And both of these approaches gives us different information that you'll see why this is useful. We identified two main problems with TOR and what's causing congestion. And then using this information, we develop an algorithm that helps reduce congestion while at the same time improving reducing latency in the network. And we will evaluate KIST, both performance and security. So before I get into how we actually measure congestion, I'm going to go through a little bit of a background of TOR internals that will be useful for understanding the remainder of the talk. Okay, so we're going to think about this from the perspective of a relay. A TOR relay is connected to many other relays and nodes in the network. So a relay is connected to other relays as part of this three-hop path that clients form. If it's an exit relay, it's connected to internet destinations. And if it's a guard relay, it's connected to TOR clients. Okay? Each client creates what are called TOR circuits as the applications are sending data through the TOR network. So these circuits are multiplexed over a single TCP connection. And every pair of relays has only a single TCP connection with multiple application level circuits multiplexed over that single connection. So now we're going to zoom in a little bit more here and get a detailed view of how this information flows through a relay. So these are the various buffers and in this process. So on the input side, data comes in on the network interface and travels into a kernel socket buffer. And TOR has a matching socket buffer, a matching application layer buffer for each of these socket buffers in the kernel. Okay, and this is the same both on the input side and on the output side. And in the middle, we have TOR circuits. These are the things that the clients create that are sent through TOR. So each of these circuits are linked to the outgoing socket buffer. And I've identified by stars here opportunities for TOR to manage traffic. So these are places where TOR can either prioritize or otherwise do something with the traffic and shape it in some way. All right, so that's the background on relays. Now we're going to get into how we actually instrumented TOR to measure congestion through this complicated structure. So to do this, I mentioned we measure congestion both in the public TOR network as well as in a private network. So I'll start with explaining how we measure congestion in the public TOR network. To do this, we developed a library which we're calling libkqtime. Libkqtime uses libpcap to intercept traffic coming off of the network interface. And it uses function interposition to intercept traffic moving between the kernel and application boundary. So by using these two approaches, we can take the data as it comes into the kernel and then match it as it travels from the kernel into TOR. And then on the outgoing side, we do the opposite. We tag it as it goes into the kernel and then match the tag on the outgoing network interface. So this gives us, using timestamps for these two processes, we can compute how long the data is actually spending inside of the kernel. Inside of TOR, once we read an entire cell, which is a TOR abstraction of a packet, sort of, we can track that cell through the TOR buffers. And again, we can use that information to compute the time that data is spending in each of these buffers. All right, now, there are various privacy concerns with doing this across multiple relays. So what I just described was the situation at a single relay. So in order to get the congestion across multiple relays, we did this inside of a private deployment of a Tor network using the Shadow simulator. Shadow is an open source discrete event network simulator that was written specifically to run Tor. Okay, so we, as part of this work, we enhanced Shadow with several missing TCP algorithms, and we do a rigorous analysis of accuracy. I'm not going to get into the details here. They're in the paper, but I do want to point out that we've designed the largest known private Tor network with 3,600 relays, which was the size of Tor at the time we started this research, and 12,000 simultaneously active clients. So we, using this real size network, we were able to measure congestion across the entire network instead of just at a single relay. So the way we do this in Shadow is because we have this sort of God's eye view over the network, we can actually attach a unique ID to every cell as the cells are created at the exit node when data is traveling in the downstream direction, and at the client when the data is traveling in the upstream direction. And by attaching a unique ID to every cell, we can then track that cell through the entire circuit along this path. And we can then measure the congestion in every one of these buffers that I mentioned at every single hop along this path. So we get very fine-grained information about where data is getting hung up in this path. All right, so we did this. We ran three live Tor relays using the libkq time approach, and we ran all 3,600 relays doing this measurement inside of Shadow. So the graphs here show the distribution of congestion over these data sources. So the left graph shows congestion in the live Tor network with our three relays, and the right shows our Shadow Tor network. So what we found was that when congestion occurs, it occurs almost exclusively in the outbound kernel buffers. Okay, so in fact, in most cases here, congestion is worse inside of the outbound kernel by orders of magnitude. And we found that on the kernel input side and inside of Tor, there's not that much congestion. So this, using this information, we can now further analyze the sources of the causes of this congestion. So we're going to do that next. So I'm going to remove the kernel input side here because we've identified the outgoing side as the problem. And again, queuing delays are occurring in these outbound kernel buffers primarily. So we found, in our analysis, we found two main problems. One is that Tor wasn't doing circuit scheduling correctly, and the second was that flushing to sockets was causing a large amount of this congestion inside of the kernel. So we'll explore both of these in sequence. So the first problem, circuit scheduling. Tor uses an asynchronous event library called libevent to manage sending and receiving information with the kernel. The way libevent works is you register your sockets with libevent, and libevent will then monitor that socket for writeability or readability. And libevent will call a callback function to the application, which will then manage that socket, will either write to it or read from it. Libevent does this sequentially and one socket at a time. So that means that when libevent says this socket is ready to write, Tor will then consider all circuits that are with outgoing data for that socket. The problem with this is at that same scheduling process, Tor will ignore all of the other circuits from all of the other sockets, even if those circuits are also writable. So this means that Tor is only actually considering a very, very small subset of the potential circuits that it should be considering while it's trying to prioritize traffic. Okay. So to understand how this was happening, we set up a very small scale experiment using Shadow. And I'm not going to get into the details in depth. Just want to note that we set up this situation where two circuits shared the same socket and where two circuits did not. And in the case where they do not share the socket, we would expect no differentiation in performance based on the circuit scheduler. And when they share a socket, we would expect this to work correctly. And we confirmed our hypothesis here. So to see how big of a problem this is, we simulated a Tor path selection with a million paths, and we found that 99.77% of any two circuits result in this unshared socket situation. So this shows us that by fixing this problem, we can actually have a significant effect on Tor performance. So that was the first problem. The second problem is flushing to sockets. So again, queuing delays are happening in the outbound kernel buffers. So the situation that Tor has is it has lots of high throughput flows, which I'll call worst priority traffic. And those high throughput flows will fill up the buffers inside of the kernel and inside of Tor. When better priority traffic, low throughput flows, comes through, Tor would actually like to send that better priority traffic out onto the network immediately. However, it's unable to do this because the kernel socket buffers are already clogged up with the high throughput traffic. So what happens is this better priority traffic has to wait until the kernel output queue is flushed before it can then be sent into the kernel. And even further, because the kernel schedules with a first-in, first-out strategy, this socket then also has to wait for all the other sockets to be flushed before this better priority traffic can actually be sent out to the network. So this results in congestion delays inside of the kernel. All right, so we've done an analysis of the congestion and identified two problems. We'll now talk about our algorithm that will solve these problems. So the main approach of this is to just ask the kernel for as much information as possible. So there's actually socket system calls that will give us the information we need to more intelligently send information between Tor and the kernel. So using syscalls, we can compute the socket space, which is the capacity of the buffer, minus the length. And we can compute the TCP space, which is the congestion window, minus the number of unacted packets. And this will basically tell us how much can we send to the kernel before the kernel will not actually send it out to the network and because of TCP throttling. So KISS main approach is don't write to the kernel if the kernel can't send it. So we're bounding kernel writes by the minimum between the socket space and the TCP space. And then that's per socket. And then globally, across all sockets, we're bounding it by the upstream bandwidth capacity of the relay. So this was a solution to problem number two. To solve the first problem, which was the circuit scheduling problem, instead of handling a libevent callback immediately for that socket, we instead add that socket to a list of sockets that we should consider, and then let libevent tell us about all the sockets that are writable, and then we go back and manage that list. So this is what I call global circuit scheduling. So KISS takes these two approaches to solve these problems and reduce congestion. So next, I'm going to go through a set of graphs that show how performance changes using KISS. So these graphs are all CDFs. On the x-axis is congestion time, and the y-axis is a CDF, cumulative fraction. So we found that using KISS, we can actually reduce congestion compared to vanilla Tor by over an order of magnitude for most in over half of the data that we collected. Okay, so we're reducing kernel outbound congestion. So the red dashed line shows in KISS and the solid black line shows vanilla Tor. What's interesting about this is in the worst case, vanilla Tor takes over 2,000 milliseconds, so over 2 seconds, to send of congestion, whereas in KISS, we were able to reduce this to less than 200 milliseconds. We also looked at Tor congestion. So this is time that's spent inside of the application layer. And we found that KISS increases Tor congestion. Okay, so this is actually a feature. What we want to do is move the time that the data spends inside of buffers inside of Tor, because this way Tor can manage it more effectively. Once Tor sends this data to the kernel, it no longer has any say over how that data gets sent out to the network. So by keeping this in Tor until the absolute last moment, Tor has control over how to prioritize its data. Now, a criticism here is, well, okay, you've moved outbound kernel congestion into Tor, but have you actually reduced it? Right. So using Shadow, we were able to measure that by measuring end-to-end circuit congestion. So this graph shows how congestion compares with KIST with vanilla Tor. And we found that KIST was able to reduce end-to-end circuit congestion from the exit all the way to the client by 25%. So we reduced this in the median, we reduced this from about 1,000 milliseconds to about 750 milliseconds. Finally, we looked at network latency. So this is the time to first byte across all of our downloads that we were performing through the network. Think of this as circuit round-trip times. We also found that KIST dramatically improves network latency. So this results in a more responsive network. The inset graph shows a logarithmic x-axis. And again, this shows that even in the worst case, KIST network latency in KIST was less than 3 seconds, whereas it extended beyond 8 seconds inside of Tor. So because we're keeping the kernel buffers shorter, and Tor is able to effectively prioritize its data, we're able to remove a lot of network latency. All right, so that was the performance evaluation. Next, I'll briefly touch on the security implications of this algorithm. So we simulated a well-known latency leak attack from CCS 2007. In this attack, the goal is to narrow down the potential locations of a client on a target circuit. The way this works is an adversary controls an exit node, and it will inject a redirect or other JavaScript that will cause the client to perform another GET request and start a timer. Okay. Once the client receives this injected redirect, it will perform another GET request. And when the adversary sees this GET request going upstream, it can stop the timer and use that to estimate latency. So we simulated this attack against both vanilla Tor and KIST, and we found that because KIST reduces network latency, this attack becomes more effective against KIST, right? So the difference between the estimated latency by our attacker nodes and the actual link latency got smaller when using KIST. To further understand this attack, we wanted to understand how many measurements would be possible until we come to the best measurement of the link latency. Okay, so we did this attack again using multiple measurements, multiple data points. And this graph shows the cumulative fraction of the number of these data points and how adding another data point makes the attack more effective. So again, what we found is that this attack is possible with fewer round-trip measurements using KIST than it is using vanilla Tor. However, on the positive side, for an attacker who's willing to take enough of these measurements, once we get over about 1,500 round-trip measurements, security doesn't degrade when using KIST over vanilla Tor. So for an attacker who's willing to stick around and take a lot of measurements, the situation isn't much different. And we think that even this attack, even in the case of KIST, where it's faster, that the attack is faster, we think this is a good trade-off because of the performance benefits that we're seeing in the network. Finally, we also simulated the throughput attack, which is presented by Mattal at CCS 2011. I'm not going to get into the details of this attack because of time. I just want to note that we did not find a significant difference in the throughput attack when using vanilla Tor or KIST. So to conclude, we took a rigorous analysis to answer the question, where is Tor slow? I do want to note that KIST complements other performance-enhancing algorithms, particularly circuit priority scheduling mechanisms, because it operates at a different layer than most existing proposals for performance improvements. Our next steps, we're currently exploring algorithmic optimizations in collecting the information that we need from the kernel to make this work. And we're testing KIST in the wild and hoping to deploy this in Tor soon. And with that, I will take questions.
You should come to that microphone or come up here and I'll give you this microphone. So there is no microphone back there, but yeah. Start, because we don't have a lot of time.
Suman Jana, Stanford. So I have two questions. First is for the Tor circuits, does Tor use one socket per circuit, or does it multiplex multiple circuits over the same socket?
Yeah, Tor multiplexes circuits over a single socket. So every pair of relays has has a single TCP connection between it. And every circuit that is traveling between those two relays is multiplexed over that connection. So each socket can carry thousands of circuits, right?
I see.
Depending on how many clients are using those pair of relays together.
I see. And do you think, is there any benefit of using separate sockets instead of multiplexing over the same socket?
So this idea was proposed this past year at CCS, actually about a year ago in Berlin. This is called per-circuit TCP. At this point, there still needs to be more analysis done on that issue. My intuition says that PCTCP will create a lot more sockets. And if each of those circuits are sending data, then this means there's more sockets in the kernel that could potentially be filled. And this could make the problem worse. So the verdict is still on that one.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Rob Johnson from Stony Brook. Nice to meet you, Rob Johnson. So a quick question. Do you think that the KIST is particularly beneficial to latency measuring attacks, or are you just bumping up against sort of a bound of, well, if you want Tor to have lower latency or lower jitter or whatever, then you're going to have an easier time measuring latency?
Yeah, I think it's fundamental to this approach, right? I mean, you can't have the best of both worlds with the current design of Tor. I think if you change some things, you can do things like padding, latency padding on the ends, but that's going to increase round-trip latency. So my intuition now says that if you want lower latency, then this attack will get slightly better.
Any more questions? I have a quick question, which is, so we know that in Tor versions often coexist, and what happens if some of the, if you, did you do any simulations of what happens when some of these, some of the relays have the new KIST version and some don't?
We did not do that, actually. That would be something worth exploring, I think. Is the benefit only possible when all relays are doing this versus some type of, incremental rollout? That might be worth exploring.
All right, thank you again.